Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is Noel Clark, who a lot of sci-fi fans would recognize from Star Trek Into Darkness and Doctor Who, where he played Mickey, a fan favorite. But he's a writer and director and producer and just, you know, creative man about town, shall we say, these days. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, your current project is a indie film called The Anomaly.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the premise of this movie.
The Anomaly is about a soldier called Ryan Reeves who wakes up in the back of a van and, you know, helps a kidnap boy, only to realize that actually he's more involved than he thought he was. And then after 9 minutes and 47 seconds, he blacks out. And basically, he wakes up in 9 minutes, 47 second segments, and he has to figure out what's going on. It's really cool sci-fi, really cool action, and kind of a puzzler, a little bit of a puzzler, I think.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of thriller in it, a little bit of, I'm going to say, scientific espionage in it.
Yeah, 100%. Simon Lewis delivered a great script, and hopefully I did his script justice.
Awesome. Now, how did you come across this story?
As I said, Simon Lewis, the writer, had worked with a friend of mine and was doing a movie called Tiger House. And when Tiger House was getting made, the director, Tom Daly, said, "You should meet Simon." I met Simon, and he pitched me a bunch of ideas. And The Anomaly was what I really grabbed onto. And I'm a big sci-fi fan. I've been in sci-fi shows and movies. I've written sci-fi films before, you know, and it just grabbed me. It reached out to me, and it was something I wanted to do.
Did you initially approach it as a directing?
No. Initially, I approached it as a producer, possibly through acting it as well. And then through the process, you know, the director that was on board that wasn't really, you know, it just wasn't really going that way any longer. And so I was kind of left in a bit of limbo, and I really wanted it to get done. So I haven't directed movies before. I thought I would just step in and take up the challenge.
Now, I saw this movie, and the initial description that I read in the promo materials said that it was Ryan was traveling between parallel dimensions, and I'm waiting for the parallel dimensions thing to kick in. I'm like, wait, this isn't parallel dimensions. No. This is time slip. Somebody goofed.
Yeah. They goofed a little bit. There's no parallel dimensions. It's not even really time slipping. It's just that he doesn't know how long he's blacking out for. So he might black up in March, and then he might black out in March. And the next time he wakes up, without giving too much away, the next time he wakes up might be in May. And so you're kind of moving forward in time, but not through any sort of time travel. Just through, once he blacks out, we don't see those moments in between. We only see the moments when he wakes up.
Right. And connecting those moments was something I thought was very interesting, that how you approached it, where he wakes up and each time he has to figure out what he needs to do in order to get more information for him to keep before that 9 minutes and 47 seconds is up.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was key, really, that, you know, I mean, having the character be military as well. I mean, the key was once he wakes up, he needs to identify very quickly where he is. If he can figure out how he got there, he can. If he can't, but to gain as much information as he can, so that the next time he wakes up, he remembers that information and he's armed with that information. And that's the key to him solving the puzzle.
Well, that's very cool. The other thing I enjoyed was the visuals. Some of the cinematography choices for depicting the cities and depicting the laboratories, those were rather stunning. How much attention to special effects were, how important was that to you?
Yeah, massively important. I put a lot of my attention into making sure the visuals for the cities and making sure they looked good and the way I wanted them to look. You know, it was really important for me that we had a futuristic city that was not too far in the future, but at the same time was clearly futuristic. And that was key for me, you know, to think that this film could be 10, 15 years from now or whatever, you know. And the action sequences, again, something I paid a lot of attention to, so much so that they were heavily choreographed because I wanted to shoot them all in one take, which is extremely difficult, but that's mm-hmm. kind of the way I wanted to do it. So they were heavily choreographed, but at the same time, I wanted to make sure that they were not stilted and completely free-flowing. And in some cases, the set was built around the action sequence. So I pre-planned them so far in advance that the big one in the middle of the movie, the whole corridor and the brothel, that whole area was built around the fight. So it was like, this is what we're going to do in the fight. Now build the set around it. And that's what we did.
Now, all of the fight sequences have this really interesting speed up, slow down technique to them. How much longer did it take to shoot those compared to like a regular fight scene in a regular movie?
The speed up, slow down technique wasn't not what really took the time, because we shot them all in super slow mo mm-hmm. because you shoot them at like 300 frames. So the whole thing, if you watched it, would be like 4 minutes. It's in super slow mo, and then you put it to normal speed, but then you have the ability to make it fast and slow whenever you need it. So that was done in post, essentially, from the footage we shot. The real thing that took long was the actual sequences themselves, because when you're doing a fight sequence where you don't cut the camera for 2 minutes, if you make a mistake at the end of the sequence or one of your actors is tired, you have to start all the way from the beginning. And that was the thing that made it really difficult. You know, that was the thing that made it really tough, was getting those dance moves, as it were, in your head and not making that one little mistake that was vision, that was so, you know, if people saw, if you could make mistakes, but if they were so obvious, you'd have to start again. And that was the tough thing.
What was the, I guess, creative choice behind deciding to shoot all the fight sequences like that?
The creative choice came from, you know, I'm a big fan of Jason Bourne movies, particularly the first one with Matt Damon. Mm-hmm. And what Doug Liman did in that movie was he created a new fight style. The first time Jason Bourne did that quick Krav Maga type fighting, like, we had not really seen that stuff before in films, not the way that it had been done and the way it had been edited. Since that point, people have copied it countless times. And sometimes now you're watching a movie, and when they're fighting, there's so many cuts in the fight, you can barely make out what's going on. Like, someone throws a punch, they cut. Someone hits the floor, they cut. And you're kind of like, it's so heavily edited. I'm just like, did I watch an action sequence or someone running around with a pair of scissors? Like, I can't tell. And so for me, I wanted to go back to kind of watching a fight as if a fight was real. And, you know, I know the fights are heightened, but essentially, you're watching two guys fight because we don't cut the camera. So the stuff that happens there happens. And you can't fake it. We're very close to each other when we're hitting, because if you're too far away, which you could do in an edited fight sequence, it's not going to look real. So, you know, it was really physical for the actors. I mean, I'm sure Ian Somerhalder, you know, in fact, I know he went home bruised a couple of days, but, you know, we wanted to put ourselves out there and show people that we were really doing this stuff.
Well, it really shows in the film. I know some of the fight sequences look like, oh, that looked like he got a rib.
yeah, we did. We definitely did.
So where does the story go for you? How does the resolution of the, shall we say, conflict, was that important to you, and how was that developed?
In terms of the end of the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it is a classic, seemingly good guy beats bad guy. But for me, I wanted it to be kind of like, at the end, you're not quite sure. You're not necessarily quite sure if he did beat them, because he hears a little noise again. He looks at the clock, like, what's going on? Then he looks back and she's like, you know, she says what she says without giving too much away for those who haven't seen it. And, you know, I feel like sometimes it's good to leave it open to interpretation, to let people decide what they think happened.
Okay.
You know, and so that's kind of where I wanted to leave it.
So that wasn't a direct hint that there may be more adventures for Ryan out there?
No, it wasn't a direct hint at all, because the ending is the ending. Like, when you watch it, it is what it is. But there's a definite if you're one of those people that's hoping for more, the interpretation that possibly there could be, you know?
Yeah, I was wondering because my viewpoint of the ending was, okay, does that mean that there's more of this technology out there and he doesn't know whose hands it is in? Well, what are we going for here? And I was very curious about that.
That was the point, to have people want. That kind of was the point. I mean, to have people wondering. You definitely know that the bad guy was beaten, but you're actually like, okay, is there more? Is there more happening? And that's kind of what I wanted. And if you look back at a lot of my movies, actually, they kind of end like that. Story 24, 4321, they kind of end in a place where you're like, oh, there could be more.
Well, that was, like I said, it was very entertaining. The fight choreographing, I was very, very intrigued by, because like you said, the choices you made to how to shoot that was very different.
Yeah.
Well, I should say just different and from the editing point of view, but the fact that they were all one fight scene from beginning to end.
Yeah.
As someone who appreciates action movies and fight scenes, I appreciated that.
Oh, thank you very much. We work very hard at it, so to hear you say that is much appreciated.
Now, what other projects do you have coming along?
So obviously I have the Troop comic book coming out in December, and that's a spin-off of another comic book called Girl One, which hasn't been released yet. So weirdly, the spin-off is coming out before the main title, which kind of happens sometimes. I know it's one of those things happens sometimes. And then I'm supposed to be directing a film in November, but I can't actually tell you. Hey, babe, I can't actually tell you what that film is yet, because it's still top secret. So but that'll be a good one, and it'll kind of be something that a lot of people have wanted me to do for a while, so that's the biggest hit you'll get about that. But should be busy.
Okay, well, can you give us a little tease about the Troop? Not too much, because like I said, I want to get you back here later when the Troop is actually out and people have read it, so we can really dig into it.
Sure. I mean, just a little thing about the Troop. The Troop is set in Titans, Titans universe, and they're a superhero team. You know, it's different to the kind of usual stuff that we've seen with metahumans, as they're called in DC, or mutants, as they're called in Marvel. It's kind of different. They're a teenage team, and I think the thing that's getting a bit of attention with the Troop is that, you know, we push the envelope. You know, in real life, people go through stuff. A lot of the stuff that people go through in life, you can't always show on comics for various reasons, and it's not that this title is trying to exploit or glamorize anything, but we're able to push the envelope a little bit more, and so that's what we do, and I'm really proud of it, and I think people will dig it.
Excellent. So yeah, people in the comics world, check out The Troop when issue one drops in December.
Yeah,
and definitely check out The Anomaly. There's some very interesting premises going on there, and like I said, the storytelling from the time jumping aspect was, I thought, very interesting.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you again for your time today, Noel.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it. Thank you
again. The movie is The Anomaly. It's out on Blu-ray and DVD from Anchor Bay, and give it a try. I think you'll enjoy it. But we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Slice
of Sci-Fi. Hello, audience. Listen to your podcast player. Now back to me. Now back to your podcast player. Now back to me. Sadly, it isn't me. But if it stopped playing pop music and switched to the Dragon Reel podcast, it could sound like me. Look down, back up, where are you? You're in a movie theater with the podcast your podcast player could sound like. What's on the screen? I downloaded it. It's a swashbuckler with a magic rapier. Look again. The swashbuckler is now an evil sorceress. Anything is possible when you listen to the Dragon Reel podcast and not music. I'm on a unicorn.
Listen to Dragon Reel, the fantasy film podcast at dragonreel.com, or subscribe on iTunes or wherever great podcasts are found.
You're home from the comic book store with your favorite titles. Wouldn't they read better while listening to Krypton Radio?
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of slice of sci-fi.
That will do it for this episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. I have to apologize a little bit for some of the audio quality in the interview with Noel. I don't know if he was in a station or walking around someplace. Sometimes the background noise was a little iffy, but we got through it. Thank you very much for tuning in and giving us your feedback. If you have comments, feel free to call. That number is 602-635-6976. Call in and leave a message. Or record one yourself and email that to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Go to the iTunes store and leave a review for Slice of Sci-Fi. Check us out on Twitter @SliceofSciFi. Check us out on Google Plus. Look for Slice of Sci-Fi over there. Look for Slice of Sci-Fi on Facebook. And as always, you can come right to the website, sliceofscifi.com. And yes, we are getting things started over at writersafterdark.com. Go over there and check it out. Yes, in addition to the reviews and interviews, I think, yeah, it's looking pretty like there will soon be a podcast there. And some of you also may have noticed that Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas has a new website finally. Yes, we will soon have ninjas. I know I keep teasing it, but that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to tease. Ninjas hide. Ninjas use stealth to appear out of nowhere, suddenly unannounced. And at this point, the next couple of episodes of Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas may end up being just that. Thank you so much for your donations. They are welcome and appreciated and put to good use. I know I said that I'm working on a Patreon page. Would you believe my timing sucks? I was about to start a Patreon page. I was about to sign up and join in that fun and start setting it up. And then the news came through that they were hacked. So I'm just waiting until the dust settles for that. And then I will be able to set up that page, let everybody know where to go to support Slice of Sci-Fi and Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas and Writers After Dark. It would even help pay for the cost of hosting the media for the older shows like Babylon Podcast and Winging It. So again, thank you all for your donations, your subscriptions. It is truly welcomed and appreciated. Once again, thank you to Sci-Fried for their musical contributions. But that'll do it. We'll be back with more Slice with Sci-Fi next week. Take care.